This week we're talking about Blue Hill Avenue. Shells fly, guns pop, a newborn child you got, and your wife wants you to stop. So that's music from the soundtrack. The song was written by Aaron D. Spears, who is also one of the stars of the film. Blue Hill Avenue is a noir-ish crime film about four friends growing up in Boston. Think you've heard that before? Actually, mostly no, you haven't, because in this iconic crime drama, the neighborhood is Roxbury. The writer and director is Black. The story is about Black Bostonians, and it was a struggle to get it made and distributed. Despite no distributor and no large-scale release, it gradually became a hit via cable television, video purchases and rentals, and ultimately BET ranked Blue Hill Avenue number 17 in its top 20 Black gangster movies. So, here to speak with us about Blue Hill Avenue, Allie Johnson, a film critic for CambridgeDay.com and editor-in-chief at InBetweenDrafts.com, and Kiera Sterling, a Somerville-based freelance film critic and academic whose latest work can be found in Mad Women in Social Justice Movements, Literatures, and Art. Allie, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Kiera, great to have you in studio, too.
To be here.
We've never been in the same room before. Last time I talked to you, we were still all remote, so it's great to have you both. So, this is our third installment of Set in Boston, and we had done The Town, we had done Friends of Eddie Coyle, and we kept hearing, okay, but there's this other Boston crime story that doesn't get respect for being iconic, but is also truly iconic about the city. So, Allie, did you know of the film before we did this here?
I mean, I'm embarrassed to admit, but no, I hadn't heard about this film. And in all honesty, it seems like a lot of fellow film critics in my generation, at least, wasn't totally aware of it, which probably speaks to, you know, the general consensus of what gets let into the film canon in general. But yeah, it was totally new to me.
And how about you, Kiera?
I had, because I am an Alan Payne stan. I will follow him to the ends of the earth, so.
And Alan Payne, remind me which one. There's so many. There's an adult cast in this and a kid cast in this. You got
correct.
Four main characters plus a whole bunch of side characters. I'm pretty sure Alan Payne is adult Tristan, correct?
That's correct.
And got his fame originally with New Jack City.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what do you think, Kiera, that this film is about?
Ooh. I think this film is about a middle-class Black guy growing up in Roxbury who, because of his loyalty to his friends, gets into the drug-dealing business. But I really think about it as a sort of intra-racial consideration about what the cost of drug-dealing was. I think there's a really big moral quandary that the protagonist, a.k.a. Alan Payne and Tristan, throughout the movie is kind of reckoning with. And I was happy to hear you say noir-ish, because I think in that way it's really trafficking in the noir conventions and thinking about like what criminality means and why does someone go down this life path.
Yeah. So, Allie, for you, what was the film about?
I don't think it's totally similar to what she said, but it stems off of it that, you know, yes, it's about the four friends and it's about how they kind of find themselves in this criminal lifestyle. But I think by the end, it was making me think a lot about how it's about masculinity, toxic masculinity, and the idea that they do it because they're putting up a front, because they were asked to grow older at a much younger age because of their situations. And it's kind of seeing them have to face the fact that their lives kind of ran out of control and that they're kind of scrambling to have that control still by the end. I don't know. It's the line Tristan has about how he did it because he was good at it that I think means a lot to the overall story, that sometimes it doesn't need to be more than that. Sometimes it's, I just was good at it and it helped me survive.
So there are a whole bunch of threads in there that I want to pick up on. I'm going to give a little orientation to our listeners who have not yet seen the film. So we have four main characters. They are Tristan, Simon, Money, and Ebone. These are those four friends. Tristan is the middle class kid. These four friends have an unbelievable bond. They are played both as children and adults in the film. And then we have a range of characters around them, including a couple of women. I'll pick up on the macho thing for just a second. Boston Globe columnist Adrian Walker wrote a piece in 21 about this film on its 20th anniversary. And his piece was called The Best Boston Movie No One's Ever Seen. And he, at that time, spoke to LaTamara Smith, who plays Nicole in the movie, about the role of women in that film.
You know, it's a very macho movie. It's a very testosterone-driven movie. The women, you know, women in the cast made the point when I interviewed them that, you know, the female roles tend to be a bit stereotypical, and I think that's a fair observation.
And so that's the feedback that he got. And Kiera, I think that's interesting, because one of the pieces of criticism that the director and writer of the movie struggled with was pushback that there was a lot of stereotype in this film. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, how can there be a lot of stereotype in a film where nobody's told those stories before and they're told from a firsthand perspective by a Black filmmaker and Black actors? So there's this tension here. And yet, the women are truly sidebars and not always treated well. So how do you think about all of the tension bundled in that blah I just gave
you? Yeah, yeah. I think about it in the context of Blaxploitation cinema writ large, right? So Blaxploitation most generally refers to a cadre of cinema, mostly in the 1970s, where you're trafficking in stereotypical depictions of Blackness. And in those depictions, you know, you're sometimes getting it right and you're sometimes getting it wrong. But I think what's important is that it's about not presenting monolithic notions of Blackness. And so at the same time, you have to reckon with the fact that these are experiences that are valid and this is reality, right? And like this film in some ways is trafficking in a social realism that is real, but the problem becomes when we sort of allow this to represent Blackness holistically. And that's not the case, right? So I think we have to hold that space for both and.
So I want to pick up on that for just a second, this both and, Allie. And we're talking, it's set in Boston, our regular series on films that are either about Boston or made in Boston. And I'm just going to flag for listeners, this is an interesting one, because they would have loved to have shot this movie in Boston. And almost none of it is shot in Boston, because at the time the film was being made in 2000, they had a budget a little over $1 million, and they literally could not afford to shoot the film here. So this film is actually shot in Canada, despite the desire. And it was cast, the kids were cast here, but then everybody had to go to Canada to film it. So, Allie, you often bring a feminist lens, right, to your critique of films. And you and I are white, and we're bringing a white lens to the critique of this film, which is important because part of the history of this film is Black film being held back by white distribution companies and often not appreciated as a Boston film crime story in the same way that, like, The Town, which we talked about last time, was. How were you thinking about all of that as a white woman as you were taking in this film?
Yeah, well, I think my first major takeaway was there is nothing about this film that is any worse than The Town. So I think I kind of want to question, who were the people calling it stereotypical? And were they the same people gatekeeping the film from reaching the same level of acclaim that things like The Town has? Because The Town is an original story. We've seen crime films set in Boston before. So I think, you know, it's about understanding that this is somebody's reflection of their life, somebody's story, and it's not going to look the same as everybody else's. But again, not to keep referencing The Town, the female characters there aren't treated that well either.
No, they are
not.
And
that's set, you know, 10-something years later. So I think it's good to question who is saying what from keeping it successful.
So this was another piece that was interesting to me, Kiera, in Blue Hill Avenue versus the sort of The Departed and The Town and these Boston crime dramas, right? Even The Friends of Eddie Coyle, which is the first one we did that is just about a guy who's completely isolated in every way possible as a Boston criminal. There is an intergenerational transfer of wisdom that happens in this film, and we're going to play a little bit of piece here. So, okay, young Tristan is played by W.B. Alexander, and he has a relationship with his uncle who owns a barbershop in this film. And this is his uncle talking to young Tristan after Tristan has given him some money.
Now, if you're going to be in this game, and from the looks of things, it looks like you done made up your mind about that, you got to realize that this is a losing game. Drug dealers don't have pensions. They don't end up with retirement funds, and they don't end up with the big house on the hill. They end up dead or wishing that they were.
So what's your point, Uncle?
Make a plan. That's the point.
So that was really striking to me. And spoiler alert for listeners, Tristan does want to get out, right? He did make a plan. And in fact, he has a conversation in a vehicle with his other friends about their investment strategies, right? There was no scene where Pete Postlethwaite, the florist in the town, says to Ben Affleck, who wants to get out, let me talk to you about your long-term investment strategy, right? It is you stay or you die. There are multiple examples of intergenerational care, transfer of knowledge, wisdom sharing, love, that's quite different in this film.
Absolutely. I think that that's really the difference about African-American film noir. It's about, especially that intergenerational component, it's about the reasons why this is a mode of survival. And I think that intergenerational aspect speaks to the ways that elders recognize the necessity of these circumstances, the social circumstances that drive young kids to, like, dealing drugs and being in the streets, right? That's a very real thing. And, like, this film is written by Craig Ross, who, you know, wrote a story about stories he had heard growing up in Malden, right? The city in Roxbury specifically was embroiled in a drug war. So this is a very real thing for the Boston community. So I think that this is why there is a level of moral questioning, something that you see like in Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, that is kind of mirrored here. And there's something a little bit more tortured and soulful about it that's probably not present in the town because of that.
It's really very striking when you watch the film. So in our remaining time now, and we're here with Allie Johnson and Kiera Sterling, two film critics. We're talking about Blue Hill Avenue, made in 2001. I want to talk about forward influence of the film, right? So Radio Boston producer Bart Tocci spoke with filmmaker Dominga Martin. Grew up in Roxbury. Her short film debuted the same day as Craig Ross's Blue Hill Avenue did, and she told us that she had seen successful Black filmmakers in New York, but this was a first.
When Craig Ross came up with his film, it was the first time that my dream of being a filmmaker seemed real, because I didn't see any filmmakers that looked like me in Boston.
So that's one piece of legacy, and there are many pieces of legacy from this film, Allie. When you watched it, did you find yourself at any point thinking, okay, I see an echo from that over here today? Where do you see influence in the legacy of Blue Hill Avenue in films that you've seen since then?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I think more so than anything, it's seeing the expansion of representation and seeing young filmmakers who don't live in cities that are predominantly known for, you know, championing the arts, actually give access to people to want to tell these stories. And I think it's like what we talked about with some of the other films about, you know, why do we always see the same story set in Boston? And in this case, I think more than anything, it maybe just opened a small doorway for more artists to come out and kind of tell their own stories and infuse Boston with the energy that they want to see it with and see it through the eyes they want to see it through.
So, Kiera, same question to you. And to feed into that, I want to play a little sound from Adrian Walker about the legacy Blue Hill Avenue didn't get to have here in Boston.
And, you know, one of the things that's really a shame about Blue Hill Avenue is that you could never see it in Boston. That is, it premiered at the Roxbury International Film Festival. They did two shows. But then it never had, like, that theatrical release. It should have had. So people in the city, most people here have never seen it. They never really got that opportunity to embrace it.
So what about the legacy of this film? We have about a minute left.
Yeah, this just makes me think about the way that Black culture always operates as an undercurrent to popular culture. And the way that this film in Moonlight, right? A similar film that operates as a coming of age, just like this film does.
Best Picture winner starring Mahershala Ali.
Absolutely. That is similarly thinking about the complicated relationship that this man who's growing up and understanding his identity has with the streets and like how that life is informing his identity. So I think like there is a really extensive legacy that we get from this film, just like New Jack City, just like Juice, that are all melding into how we understand Black masculinity and Black coming of age on screen.
All right. Kiera Sterling is a Somerville-based freelance film critic and academic whose latest work can be found in Mad Women in Social Justice Movements, Literatures, and Art. And Allie Johnson is a film critic for CambridgeDay.com and editor-in-chief at InBetweenDrafts.com. We've been talking about Blue Hill Ave. Thanks so much to the both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR. I'm Tiziana Deering. On behalf of the whole team, thanks for listening. Tune in again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.